Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Hey, good morning. It's now 4 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network, and I am Austin Hill. Honored to have you with us. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we strive to be informative and challenging, yet also hopeful and helpful as we take a look at the day's news, the events of our lives and times, and we talk about solutions to our problems, all from a Christian faith perspective. Coming up later this morning, we look forward to talking with a very intriguing lady. You probably don't know this name. You might not anyway. But I do hope that you're with me in just about an hour from now. If you have to step away from the radio or the mobile phone that you're listening to us with or the computer, whatever it is, please make sure you are back at 5 minutes past the hour, 7.05 a.m. Central Time specifically, because you don't want to miss this. We'll be joined by a lady named Adele Keim. Adele Keim, K-E-I-M. Now, this is an extraordinarily well-educated and bright lady. I had the privilege of talking with her yesterday. I think she's going to say some very profound things about the quest, the struggle to maintain religious liberty in America. We have seen over the last week, it's been just a little over a week now, an all-out assault on the religious liberties, probably of a lot of different groups of people, but in particular Christians. We've seen some dramatic developments in terms of the governments of individual states and cities and counties being able to, or at least believing that they're able to, force a private Christian individual to participate in certain kinds of religious ceremonies and services and those kinds of things. The dominant media characterizes this as businesses refusing services and being discriminatory. But what's really going on here, and I've said this many times before, we need to be discerning enough to reframe the discussion in our country. We can't let CNN or Fox News Channel or, quite frankly, the Obama administration or HuffingtonPost.com or New York Times or DrudgeReport.com, we can't let media outlets and government agencies define our world for us. What's at stake here is the question of whether or not governments can force private individuals, and for the purposes of our discussion, we're talking about private individual Christians in America, can government agencies force them to participate in ceremonies and practices and procedures that violate their essential religious tenets? That's what this debate about religious freedom, or the RFRA laws, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that came out of Indiana, that's what this is about. That's, by the way, what the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act was about when President Bill Clinton signed that into law at the federal level back in 1993. His party supported this. The Democrats' party had a majority in the Congress. President Bill Clinton was a Democrat. This was viewed as a good thing for America only 22 years ago. Now it's viewed as very controversial. So Adele Keim, back to her, she is an attorney with the nonprofit Beckett Fund. That is a nonprofit law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. As I was saying, I had the privilege of speaking with her yesterday. She is an extraordinarily bright lady. She is a graduate of Notre Dame Law School. She has served in private law firms and in government agencies, both in the country of Canada and in the United States of America. And she will speak to us about what really is at stake in terms of your ability to live out your Christian faith, and what might the consequences be in the United States if Christians continue to remain silent, continue to not care who occupies the halls of government, who is the state attorney general where we live, who is the governor, who represents us in the legislature, who sits on the benches of the courts. What could happen if Americans continue, American Christians in particular, continue to be ambivalent and to not care? We'll have that conversation just about an hour from now. So I was just fascinated talking with this lady yesterday. Adele Kime, an attorney with the Beckett Fund, coming up later this morning in about an hour. So stand by for that. Also, just ahead, we've got some it's a very interesting news, new developments on the media and entertainment front. Some very interesting developments that I think evangelical Christian America will be very excited about once this begins to unfold around the country. I think you and I will appreciate this as well. I'll tell you about it a little bit later this morning. And when we come back, we haven't spoken to him for a while, but one of the gentlemen that I'm privileged to speak to periodically, and I just always find it to be a fascinating conversation when we have him on the program, a gentleman named Jed Medefins. He is with the Christian Alliance for Orphans. And with all the frustrating and difficult and, quite frankly, bad things happening in the world, not only domestically in the U.S., throughout North America, but in other parts of the world, one of the great things that we're privileged to bring to you and privileged to cover here on this program is this really a full-scale rush of Christian individuals and families adopting orphan children. What's going on with the orphan children of the world? We'll give you the good news with Jed Medefins coming up next. It's now 9 minutes past the hour. Great to have you with us. This is the Austin Hill in the Morning program from the Faith Radio Network. It's 11 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Great to have you with us. There's something happening within the church as it pertains to orphans and child adoption. Have you heard anybody make that observation as of late? Well, it's more than just a cliche. It's more than just a saying. And with all the turmoil in our country, yes, but especially around the world, it's good to know that Christians are being proactive, thinking about children who have been abandoned or without parents. Joining us to talk about it, a man who's been with us before. He serves as the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Jed Medefins joins us once again on our guest line. Jed, welcome back to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Austin. Thank you.
There's something going on in the church with adoptions. I've heard that from you and from others. What is going on?
Yeah, well, there certainly is, and we're seeing this, and actually data showing that practicing Christians are adopting at more than twice the rate of the American populace in general. There's a surge as I travel around the country just talking with folks all over. There's this desire to, you know, as often I hear it expressed, to really embrace the pure and faultless religion that James describes as looking after, caring for orphans and widows in their distress. And there's a lot of different expressions of that. It looks like adoption, both local and international. It looks like foster care and mentoring of kids locally. It looks like supporting churches in other parts of the world and caring for orphans. And it's really something you could call a trend or maybe even a movement. It's exciting to see.
Now, you've observed these trends with adoption and even observed, I'm sure, periods where Christians, perhaps here in the United States, aren't so aware, maybe even a bit ambivalent about the needs for adoption and orphan care, and you've seen that change. You've seen it kind of ebb and flow over the years. Where are we at right now?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one thing that's for sure is that this is not just something new. This goes back to the earliest days of the church. In the Roman Empire, Christians were known as a people when Romans would often take unwanted babies outside of a city and leave them there. They called this exposing, and they would just abandon the child to the wind and the rain and the wild animals. And yet Christians, even though it was a small and persecuted church at the time, Christians would go outside the city walls, find these children, bring them in, and often raise them as their own. And that's something we've seen of Christians at their best throughout history. And mm-hmm. it's always been the case, but we're seeing a real resurgence of this, both in the U.S. and around the world.
That's very exciting. Jed Medefins, he's the president of an organization called the Christian Alliance for Orphans. He's on our guest line here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. Give us some examples of how people are kind of experiencing this awakening, and then not just saying, oh, well, that's interesting, I'm now aware of the need here. They're taking proactive steps to fill the need. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. You know, one thing's for sure. you know, government can provide certain protections for children. So say a child's being abused or abandoned or neglected here in the U.S., government can step in and say, you know, that there needs to be protection here, but government is not going to be able to help these children thrive. What a child most needs is belonging and nurture and love. And so that's why the church can't outsource James 1:27 to government. We have a vital role to play in being those families and being those mentors and being those consistent adults in these children's lives. And that's just what we're seeing. We're seeing churches step up and say, you know, we're going to be a church known for foster care or known for being mentors to kids in the local foster system, or families are adopting and the whole church community wraps around them and supports them in that journey. And so we're seeing places like Colorado where the number of children waiting to be adopted in the state system has been cut by more than half in the last several years. And in places like Broward County, Florida, where virtually every child that enters the foster system is in some way touched by a Christian family in that county, whether short-term foster care or long-term adoption journey. It's really beautiful to see the church stepping up and being known once again as a people who care for and defend these children.
Now, Jed, what you're describing here, children in the foster care system in Broward County, Florida, or somewhere in Colorado, that sounds like American children, children who were born and are living here domestically. I know the Christian Alliance for Orphans also is very much involved in what you describe as global orphan initiatives. Tell us about the global work of the CAFO.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, the Christian Alliance for Orphans includes 165 organizations, and many are working in the U.S., many are also working globally, working with the local church in other countries to serve children that don't have families. And so, you know, of course, some of this looks like residential care and group homes for these kids, but there's also a real effort to help the local church in these other countries catch a vision for embracing children into their homes. And so, for instance, In Ukraine, we're seeing a real resurgence of the local church there saying, just like the church in Colorado, saying, these kids who don't have families, who don't have anyone else to stand for them, we will stand for them and we will welcome them in. And so, you know, I just love this story. I was in Ukraine just about a year ago, and a guy was sharing with me how he had grown up under the Iron Curtain in the church, and so they were very oppressed in many ways. And the government even sometimes would remove children from the homes of Christian families, remove their own children, and take them away from those parents because they were unfit, because they were Christian parents. And they would put these children in government orphanages. And yet today, so many Christian families in Ukraine are adopting that the government is actually going to churches and saying, will you please take more children from orphanages?
Oh, wow.
We see that you provide loving homes. You're the only people willing to take in these children that come from difficult backgrounds. And so, you know, in just a little more than a generation, you've seen the government of Ukraine shifting from taking children from Christians and putting them in the orphanages to going to Christians and begging them to take more kids from the orphanages.
My goodness, what a shift, what a great enlightenment that is. Jed, where is the greatest need for those of us who are stateside or maybe living in Canada, those of us here on the North American continent, where are we to understand is the greatest need to care for orphans? Is it a domestic matter or children that are detached from their parents elsewhere around the world, internationally?
Yeah, you know, I would really say it's both. I mean, there's, you know, of course, in the U.S., you have more of a social safety net, but of course, a child that's just getting food and shelter without the love and nurture of a family, the statistics show that they do not do well over the long run. What every child really most needs is love and belonging. And so we see that in the U.S., but then overseas as well. There's such pressing physical need in many countries that the effect of HIV/AIDS has ripped apart the social safety net in many countries. And so there's a desperate need there as well. And so, you know, what I just encourage people is I say, hey, you know, not every Christian is called to adopt. Not every Christian is called to foster. There's certainly great need in those realms, but every Christian can play a role. And that can look like supporting families in your church that are fostering or adopting, being a surrogate grandparent or running errands or helping with yard care or being a mentor for kids in the foster system. There's a role called the CASA, Court Appointed Special Advocate, and you essentially become a mentor and speak up for this child in court and in other cases, and it's just, and then there's of course plenty to do in terms of financially supporting work around the world as well. So, you know, it's an all of the above, and it's just a saying, hey, Lord, I want to be a part of your response to these kids. How do you want to use me?
Yeah. For the pastor or the layperson, either one who's listening to our conversation here saying, you know, we should get our church involved in this. What do you recommend? What's a good first step there, Jed?
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, I would encourage that impulse. I'd say that is so good. You know, not only because it's answering God's call to the church to care for the orphan and defend the fatherless, like it says in Isaiah. So there's a mandate there. But what I see just as much, Austin, is that when churches embrace this together, it's a discipleship journey. It draws people in the church into a deeper understanding of the Father heart of God and closer as a community as they support each other through the joys and challenges of the adoption journey, the foster journey, supporting each other in that walk. And so, you know, man, I couldn't encourage pastors more in that regard. And I would say, you know, as a first step, of course, I would invite people to the Christian Alliance for Orphans website, kfo.org. We've got lots of resources, videos, materials. I would also encourage that they join us at the National Summit. It's called CAFO 2015 this year, and it's in Nashville at the end of April and the 1st of May. And it's really, there'll be people from pretty much every state, 30-plus countries as well, all coming together there to really explore how do we effectively serve as foster parents, as adoptive parents, building church-based supports for these families, as well as others who are engaging overseas, all coming together to learn to do that well. And, of course, just celebrating these things together, too, and great music and some of your favorite bands and all of that. But it's ultimately about the church reflecting God's heart in visible action.
That sounds great. I can't imagine a great event, any kind of great event going on in Nashville without some great music involved, at least on some level anyway.
Absolutely. Music City. So, you know, we've got Audio Adrenaline and Jars of Clay and others coming who themselves really care deeply about orphan care and foster care and adoption and many others as well.
Jed Benefend, he is the president of CAFO, as he described it, the Christian Alliance for Orphans. You can find them at CAFO.org. We're linking to them on our network website at MyFaithRadio.com. And that's a great place to check in if you'd like more info and to get started. Jed, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Thank you for what you do, and I appreciate the update. And let's check in again maybe when you're in Nashville.
Sounds great, Austin. Thanks a lot.
It's now 22 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I am Austin Hill. Our program continues. It's now 26 minutes past the hour. Good morning and welcome to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. The program is Austin Hill in the Morning. And I'm privileged and honored to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8 as we talk about the issues of the day and their impact on our faith journeys and on our families and our individual lives and our country, our communities, and our culture. Weekdays at 12 noon Central Time, it's the Connecting Faiths broadcast with host Neil Stavem. Yesterday, Neil spoke with author David Platt about his book, Counterculture. Here's part of that discussion.
You talk about, you know, how often the debate about sexual activity often gets paired with ethnic identity. Talk about why that isn't a solid argument.
Well, the one of the things that address is that ethnic identity is a morally neutral attribute, that black or white is not an issue of right or wrong. And where that's different from sexual activity is that sexual activity is a morally chosen behavior. One of the things I reference in the book is a Time magazine report that said that infidelity may be in our genes. Well, surely that doesn't mean that because a married man has an innate desire for sexual activity with a woman who's not his wife, that he needs to fulfill that desire in order to be fully himself. So the mere presence of a desire doesn't excuse unfaithfulness to one's wife. So that's not an issue of someone's makeup. It's an issue of morality. And disposition toward a behavior doesn't mean justification for that behavior. So adultery is not inevitable. It's immoral. And so that's where we've got to make sure when we, and because this argument is definitely prevalent in the culture around us, that ethnic identity and sexual activity are the same when they're not.
Well, speaking of ethnic identity, that has become another, certainly a a hot issue, and you address it in the book Counterculture, and you suggest that, you know, our discussion of race often begins from a gospel-less starting point. What does it look like if we discuss race from a biblical perspective?
Well, one of the things that I talked about, and some would say it's just a matter of semantics, but I think it's deeper than that. As soon as we start talking about the issue of race, we're assuming that we're from different races. And what I do is I go back in the beginning of Scripture to show that ultimately we are a part of the human race. And so we need to start our discussion from a point of unity, and then to realize from there that, okay, this category of race, as we commonly use it, really is unhelpful because it often locates our identity in physical appearance. So you're black or I'm white. Those statements that seem simple, they're more than mere indicators of skin color, though. They carry with them a whole host of stereotypes and assumptions that are based upon solely biological attributes. And so just because skin tone or hair texture looks a certain way, we almost instinctively assume certain characteristics about others. And so what I do is I walk through, okay, we've got to be careful then not to undercut our unity from the very beginning, but to think through, okay, how are we all a part of the same race? Now, not to minimize our different ethnicity. And that's where I just talk about in Scripture, the way we see different peoples and yes, different colors and different backgrounds and different histories and how those all come together. The beauty of the gospel, again, is how God brings all people together with a beautiful unity amidst our diversity. And so those gospel foundations, I think, are oftentimes missed in our discussions of racism and the culture around us.
Author David Platts talking about his book Counterculture with host Neil Statham on yesterday's episode of Connecting Faith. Coming up on today's program, Neil speaks with author Todd Billings, talking about his personal journey and his book, Rejoicing in Lament, Wrestling with Incurable Cancer, and New Life in Christ. That's coming up on today's episode of Connecting Faith, 12 noon Central Time, from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, it's now 6:31. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News on the way next. It's now 35 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Still to come after the news at the top of the hour, big discussion on religious liberty and what's weighing in the balance for the United States of America. Keep it here. We'll tell you all about it. What happens when a news journalist goes undercover at a pro-life crisis pregnancy convention in Charleston, South Carolina? Well, such a series of events actually occurred. It was at the Heartbeat International Conference. A reporter with Cosmopolitan magazine showed up undercover, not registered as a media professional or journalist at the event. And out of that comes a very interesting story in Cosmopolitan magazine. What possibly could be wrong, though, with the conference, which articulates the slogan, "Save the Mother, Save the Baby"? Well, all kinds of inaccuracies and inconsistencies come out in the Cosmopolitan article. Joining us to talk about it, Kim Cotola, host of the Cradle My Heart program, broadcast live real-time Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. She was at the Heartbeat International Conference, and she joins us with an update. Hello, Kim. Thanks for being here.
Good to talk with you today, too.
What possibly could be wrong with the slogan "Save the Mother, Save the Baby"? Who would have any problem with that, Kim? Tell us what's going on here in Cosmopolitan magazine.
Well, I think the objection is a subtlety here, and I've not actually heard that slogan. The slogan that I've heard is "Love the mother, love the baby, love the mother, love them both." You know, love the mother, love the child. But Megan Winter, writing in Cosmopolitan, says an oft-repeated catchphrase, "Save the mother, save the baby," shorthand for many pregnancy center workers' belief that the most effective way to prevent abortion is to convert women.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, that's, if you can accuse pregnancy help centers of being some sort of shadow organization for the church trying to trick women into professing faith to get services to help with a problem pregnancy, I guess that's the charge. And, you know, that's pretty much the flavor of the article, is that, look, this is just, you know, a bunch of people who are trying to convert you. They're not actually your friend. They're not actually helping you. The cost is very high if you go ahead and enter into the help that a pregnancy center would offer you.
Is there any objection to a mother who decides to keep her baby? The pregnancy may be unplanned, maybe even unwanted, but the mother says, this is my child, and I'll bring this child to full fruition and have the child born. Is there opposition from this reporter at Cosmopolitan Magazine to a mother who makes that choice?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. No, I mean, to answer your question directly, no, I don't think anybody would object to that. You know, somebody who voluntarily seeks help and it has a faith-based component and then receives that help, what's the problem? There's no problem there. But I think the writer being able to strike this note, of all places, in Cosmopolitan Magazine, I mean, the name of Jesus Christ being proclaimed in those pages is some kind of a miracle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, everything else notwithstanding. But I think reflects this certain moment that we've arrived at in the pregnancy help movement, because there are many centers that I'm aware of that are saying, you know, we should not be leading with the gospel message. We should be offering that cup of cold water. And then if someone says, why would you help me in this way? You can explain, as Peter, you know, as St. Peter said we are to do, that here's the reason for the hope that I have. And, you know, that's a conversation that probably should be taking place. Because, you know, are we going to be able to help more people by just offering the help, whether or not they're open to the gospel message? There's a tension there, because a lot of people have been drawn into this movement out of a love for the gospel and out of, you know, concern for the lost. So there's a culture clash there within the movement, and there's most certainly a culture clash within the culture if people don't understand our language, and that there's no coercive aspect to this. There's nothing covert going on here. There's nothing manipulative happening. It's simply an offer of, you know, learning more about the faith.
Sure. Kim Cotola from the Cradle My Heart broadcast, heard Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. She's with us here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. As I read about this Heartbeat International conference that you attended, Kim, this event that just wrapped up in South Carolina recently, and I'm reading about it. So my first impression of it is what I read about in Cosmopolitan Magazine. It would appear as though, well, all the photographic imagery and all the quotes come from women. It would appear as though this was a heavily female-attended conference, maybe even exclusively a female audience in attendance at this conference. And I would like to think that one of the prevailing positive sentiments in the dominant media culture in our country is to respect women and their stated positions on things, whatever that position may be. Is there some sense in which Cosmopolitan, which certainly targets a female readership, are they not respecting the choices and preferences of the women in attendance at this conference?
Well, I think that Cosmopolitan is carrying the water for the National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL, which has, you know, tried to discredit and debunk the work of pregnancy centers for, well, as long as they've been succeeding in competing against abortion. I mean, you know, against abortion businesses, I should say. You can put it on that level, that by trying to offer women a better choice, yes, they are. They are competing, and they are trying to take business away from abortion providers. Now, generally, they are non-profit entities, so they're not doing that for a profit motive, but, you know, NARAL sees it as a threat. And so they've been discrediting and debunking the pregnancy help movement for a lot of years. And in true to form, in this article, you know, Cosmopolitan publishes this idea that NARAL Pro-Choice released the results of its own investigation, right? That sounds really ominous, doesn't it? Showing how CPCs misled and misinformed women.
Right.
Women are entitled to accurate, comprehensive, unbiased medical information to make their own decisions, according to that CPC report in January.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, within the movement, there have been some centers that have had some volunteers who were not properly trained, who saw it as an opportunity to, you know, talk about the gospel, to try to talk to women about their lifestyle and their lifestyle choices instead of the problem at hand, dealing with the pregnancy. And part of the reason for this conference is to get everybody on the same page and say, look, this is our approach. And if you don't agree, perhaps you need to volunteer in some other setting. You know, there's nothing wrong with presenting the gospel, but it could be seen as exploitive or manipulative to only focus there when someone is in a desperate moment. So, but you know, the idea that there is something illegal going on or something very dark, people, you know, if you press that point, you can find articles, Austin, why would a nonprofit do that, right? What's at stake there? Other than, really, is the church that zealous for new converts? I mean, you and I, that's the big problem, right? The church isn't zealous enough for new converts. If I could, you know, put that into a symbol for us about the problem in evangelicalism today. But they would go so far as to say that there's something really dark going on here, you know, with adoption mills. That they're tricking women into giving birth simply so that they can take babies and provide them on some sort of black market. And it's ludicrous, and there's never been any proof of that because it doesn't exist. But they put that out there as a fear factor to try to alarm women not to go and receive the help from a pregnancy center.
Kim Cotola, I know you were in attendance and led a workshop at the Heartbeat International Conference. At least I believe I have my facts straight on that. I think you led a discussion and taught on harnessing the power of media and effectively communicating vis-a-vis the media about pro-life concerns. I think you and I both live with this conviction that Christians cannot ignore what goes on in the media, whether it's the professional news journalism media or entertainment media or private social media, just ignoring it, paying no attention to it, saying, oh, that's a bunch of crazy stuff and walking away, that's not an option. Comment, if you would, on the damage that is done to good and just and moral and virtuous causes like the sanctity of life. When we ignore something like this report in Cosmopolitan magazine, what does that lead us to?
Well, I'll tell you, in my workshop, Austin, what I encourage these women who and men who are involved in the pregnancy help movement to do is to, just as you're, I think, suggesting, if you see this, because this article has been picked up, it came out in Cosmo, I think, a couple of days ago, and it's been picked up by Huffington Post and a lot of other outlets, Slate Magazine, all the usual suspects, in my opinion, and, you know, trumpeting it as proof positive that the pregnancy help movement is nothing but a front for the church. So, okay, if you are involved in the pregnancy help movement and you know that not to be true, now it's your turn to write a letter to the editor to respond, to do something, even if only on your own website, in your own social media, to refute this. And that's part of what I have done for, well, probably the last 6-7 years at the Heartbeat Conference and other venues, is to tell people who are intimidated by media that, look, especially these days, you have the chance to say whatever you want. You have the chance to state your case and publish it. And, you know, I ask people to always adhere to the facts, of course, and try to give them some basic journalistic ethics with which to do that. But you're right. If we sit quietly and say, yep, we can be portrayed in Cosmo Magazine and elsewhere as a bunch of crazy cultists who just have an agenda and who don't really care about women, we're just marginal people who are driven by some belief that's on the fringe. Well, how will the average person understand us to be anything different than that caricature that's being put forward about us?
Good question and fair point. Kim Cotola, her program is called Cradle My Heart. It is broadcast live real time on the Faith Radio Network, Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. Central Time. You can find Kim anytime and her program audio at myfaithradio.com. Kim, thanks for bringing this to our attention. This is very fascinating and another important life lesson, I would say, in navigating the rough waters of a media-drenched culture. Whether we like it or not, we appreciate you being here. We'll look forward to hearing you Sunday evening.
Bottom line, pregnancy help movement is helping women, and they deserve our support. Thank you, Austin, for the chance to say it today.
Good to be with you, Kim. 47 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network.
We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. And we pray that our unity may one day be restored.
This is the Faith Radio Network.
And they'll know we are Christians by our love, by our love. Yes, they'll know we are Christians by our love.
You've probably heard this song before. From the AD TV series.
Turn away from violence. Jesus is the light of the world.
You dare to believe. Mary. Jesus has risen.
Some audio from the trailer of the television series AD, a spectacular television miniseries that, quite frankly, is having a spectacular success on the NBC television television network. This launched last weekend, and the audience shares were just huge. And I saw portions of this. I did not watch the entire broadcast. But I am going to commit to myself and to my family that we will watch this live, real-time, on our local NBC television affiliate. And I will tell you, this is a very good thing and worthy of your attention, because oftentimes, as Christians, living in the tumultuous culture that we live in, it's easy to identify things that we don't agree with. It's easy to identify things in media, in arts and entertainment, and in pop culture that violates the essential core tenets of our Christian faith. Even this whole huge discussion that we're embroiled in here in the United States of America over religious liberty. This is really heavy, weighty stuff. And there are a lot of forces that want to undermine our religious liberties. It's kind of a separate issue, public policy and the laws that govern us. That's separate from media and arts and entertainment and public communication. Nonetheless, when something emerges in the, shall we say, in the public square that is very affirming and encouraging of our Christian values and of our faith, and this portrayal of the story of Christ at AD, I mean, just think of what the acronym stands for, after death, right? Could not be more blunt and profound. It begins with the story of the resurrection. Well, it began last Sunday with the story of the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ. We'll be told in forthcoming episodes. When this comes into the public square, it's worthy of, I believe, of our praise and our encouragement and our thanks. So my thanks here on this program to the NBC Television Network for actually giving this an airing. And some phenomenal producers were involved in this and putting this together. Interestingly enough, and if you're not aware of this, I don't think enough has been made of the significance of this. But the role of Mary Magdalene and the role of John the Apostle are portrayed by black actors. And what a powerful image, what a powerful message that conveys to really the entire world, that the story of Christ is not relegated and exclusively for any particular ethnicity or race. Yes, indeed, Christianity has been embodied, and the message of Christ has been carried to the world through the Western world and through Europe and the United States of America in no small part, but this is not white man's religion. And those who produced this AD television miniseries were very, very intentional and careful, I believe, to put that together and to include those other actors, that other actor and actress in this very phenomenal production. AD, the television miniseries, it continues again this Sunday evening on the NBC television network. Again, my thanks to the NBC television network for making this happen. Big stuff. I hope you'll check it out. Now, there's also some other news that we'll get to into the next hour about very significant developments in the world of arts and entertainment and media and Christian-specific content in the arts and entertainment and media industries. Very interesting. I mean, the demand for such things among the American population is very substantial. And I don't know that the otherwise secular news media has taken note of how the tastes and preferences and consumer choices of American Christians are really driving publishing and motion picture production and television viewership. And it does pose an interesting question to me. What if Christian America specifically not only created a great consumer base, which it does, what if Christian America actually was more of a producer base? What if we produce more influence in our culture, more grace, more service, more charity in our culture? What if we were producers every bit as much as we are consumers? The industries of media and entertainment and arts and performing arts and such, they are responding in big ways right now. Even at a time such as this, when our culture is upside down and Christians just seem to be treated very poorly, and our views on things and our desires for public policy and the future of our country seem to be undermined at every turn. All at the same time, the arts and entertainment and media industries are responding to the consumer preferences of Christians. What if we weren't merely consumers? What if we were producers in American society? Think about that. We'll talk more about it coming up into the next hour. On the way, very thoughtful lady weighing in on the religious freedom issue in our country. Adele Keim from the Beckett Fund nonprofit law firm in Washington, D.C. joins us shortly after the news at the top of the hour. So stay with us. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program. This is Faith Radio. Six past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Weekday afternoons 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. It's Susie Larson hosting the Live the Promise program. Yesterday, she spoke with journalist and author Craig Von Busek, talking about some of the big issues of the day. Here's part of that discussion.
Let's talk about Russian aggression.
Oh, my. We have entered into a new era here in our relationship with Russia ever since their invasion of the Crimea in the south of Ukraine. And Russia has said, well, you know, it's our the land is filled with Russian-speaking people of Russian culture, so we have every right to take Crimea. But the thing that we need to realize is that part of communist philosophy was to take their people and transport them into the lands that they conquer so that the culture and the language of the Russians and of the communists would then be spread into all these other lands. So why is Crimea, why do they have Russian-speaking people? Because the Soviet Union put them there. But this was the land of Ukraine. Well, the international community is basically, in the same way that we did with Adolf Hitler taking Czechoslovakia and the Sudetenland and so forth, we have turned a blind eye and we've said, well, I guess, yeah, it's full of Russian people and Russian culture, so I guess they can have it. But then when the Russians started backing these separatists in Ukraine, the United States and the community of nations have risen up and said, that's going too far. Well, this has put Russia now on the defensive, and Russian heavy bombers flew out of area patrols last year more than any other year since the Cold War, and that Russia's long-range flights are rising and occurring in places they haven't before, like Canada, Alaska, and the English Channel. Mm-hmm.
That was on yesterday's episode of Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Coming up on today's episode, Susie welcomes author Patsy Claremont to the show to talk about faith-based freedom. Seems to be a hot topic these days. That's Live the Promise, Susie Larson, weekdays 3 till 5 p.m. I'm Austin Hill. It's 6:58 Central Time. SRN News on the way next. Keep it right here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program from the Faith Radio Network.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. It's now 4 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. And I'm Austin Hill. Great to have you with us. And it's an honor for me to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8 Central Time as we seek to be informative and challenging. Hopeful and yet helpful, all at the same time as we take a look at the issues of our time, the news of the day, keeping our Christian faith as our central focal point. Coming up later this morning, a Breakpoint, of course, with John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas, that's on the way. And in just moments, we will have her join us on the phone line. I'm glad you're here. Just stay with me. Do not leave the radio. Do not turn anything off, your mobile phone, your tablet computer, your desktop, your laptop, whatever it is. You need to hear my next guest that'll be on the phone line here in just about 3 minutes from now. Her name is Adele Keim, K-E-I-M, Adele Keim. She is an attorney, a graduate of Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame Law School. She has served in legal professional positions, both in government and in the private sector, both in the United States of America and in Canada. And as a matter of fact, she once worked for an evangelical Christian legal freedoms advocacy group for the entire country of Canada. She is now with a law firm called the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit legal defense foundation in the United States of America, headquartered in the Washington, D.C. area. She joins me next to tell us what is at stake in America with respect to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the controversial state version that has emerged in the state of Indiana and in Arkansas, I would add, as well, and the growing hostility and backlash towards religious freedom. What happens if we lose it? We'll talk to a very insightful attorney about this coming up next. 6 minutes past the hour. Stay with us.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
7 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. So you've heard about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or the RFRA law, as it's oftentimes abbreviated, the one that has come from the state of Indiana. This, of course, is a state law that mirrors a federal law that came about 22 years ago. This is Indiana Governor Mike Pence being interviewed just last weekend on ABC television by host George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos leads off with a very important question. Roll it.
So was it a mistake to sign this law?
Absolutely not. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act was signed into federal law by President Bill Clinton more than 20 years ago, and it lays out a framework for ensuring that a very high level of scrutiny is given any time government action impinges on the religious liberty of any American. After that, some 19 states followed that, adopted that statute, and after last year's Hobby Lobby case, Indiana properly brought the same version that then State Senator Barack Obama voted for in Illinois before our legislature.
Governor Mike Pence of Indiana on national television just last Sunday. Well, we are now told that the governor of Indiana intends for the new law to be fixed, to be amended. But what exactly might that look like? Some are saying that the fix could be worse, far worse than the present-day circumstances. Joining us to talk about it, Adele Keim. She is a noted attorney, undergraduate at Princeton University, also a graduate from Notre Dame Law School. She has served in legal capacities both in the countries of Canada and in the U.S., having worked with international religious freedom and social issues for the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. She's now with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She joins us on our guest line now to comment on the Indiana situation. Adele Keim, welcome to the program and to the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Austin.
Before we talk about the religious freedom law, the essence of it, and proposed fixes for that, give us your characterization, if you would, Adele, as to what happened last week, this huge uprising, this earthquake of resistance to religious freedom in the United States of America that erupted in local television media but then became this worldwide phenomena online on social media. What, in your estimation, really happened to our country last weekend?
You know, those of us who work in the area of religious liberty have been hearing rumblings for a few years now that religious liberty was now under attack, that it was now politically correct in some circles not just to oppose this or that particular religious liberty claim or this or that particular case, but that religious liberty as a concept was under attack. This, there were people who had formerly been at the fringes of academic life saying things like, when you give religious people accommodations, you're threatening the rule of law. And last week what we saw was those people who were at the fringes of academia coming out into the popular media and telling the press their view. This is that the Indiana RFRA was imperiled all of our rights. The reality is many of the people who were speaking out in the media and who were behind the social media attacks mm-hmm. on the Indiana RFRA don't just oppose Indiana's law, they oppose religious liberty for all.
Adele, just to clarify, it would seem that the hostility, the attacks, are not geared towards all religious groups. They may oppose religious liberty in broad general terms, but it seems like it's very, very distinct, very targeted towards Christians. For example, I don't see the same movement taking aim or really disagreeing much with the religious liberties of the growing Muslim population in North America. I may be missing something, but it seems like this is pretty one-dimensional in that regard. Can you comment on that?
You know, the tragedy of those who have come out opposing the Indiana RFRA is that they're hurting a law that actually protects not just those that they particularly disagree with, that is the traditional historic Christian teaching on marriage, but and those who follow it, but it's also hurting Sikhs and Muslims and Jews, Native American practitioners, people all across this country who really rely on laws like Indiana's RFRA to protect their rights because they belong to religious groups that are just too small to have an effective voice in the democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy is that the victims, if laws like Indiana's get taken down, they've been in force at the federal level for 20 years, over 20 years, in about 20 different states, including bastions of conservatism like Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
If these laws fall by the wayside, the victims are going to be minority religious groups, and they're going to be people serving the poor. Out of religious motivation, because those are two of the groups that we see taking advantage of these laws most consistently.
Very interesting. Adele Kime, she is an attorney with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit legal defense law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She's a graduate of Princeton University and Notre Dame Law School. She's worked on social and religious liberty causes both in the country of Canada and here in the United States. She's on our guest line commenting on the Indiana Religious Freedom Act, or RFRA law, and possible changes to that law amid the controversy. Help us understand what this Indiana law, as it was signed into law by the governor there, Governor Mike Pence, what does this law really stipulate? There's, I believe, a lot of misinformation about this. What is the law really about?
The Indiana's RFRA law is modeled on the federal law that was enacted 22 years ago, broad bipartisan majorities in Congress. In fact, it was unanimously voted on in the House. There were 97 out of 100 votes for it in the Senate. It was signed into law by President Clinton, supported by the ACLU at the time, as well as evangelical Christian groups. The law basically does this. The stated goal was to take religious liberty out of the hands of special interest politics. And they did that by enacting a legal standard and saying, courts, when you're listening to a religious claimant's claim that that big government is burdening their religious practice, if the religious person can show that, then the ball shifts to the government to come in with a compelling interest, a really, really good reason for burdening that person's religious liberty, and show that they have no alternative. They can't go around this religious person. They can't root around it. They've got to go through this person's rights in order to achieve their goal. That's a high standard. It can be tough for the government to reach. But what Congress and President Clinton, the ACLU and evangelical organizations said in the early 90s was, religious freedom is our first freedom. We must protect it. And when the government wants to limit someone's religious freedom, they have to have a really good reason for doing so. That's all the Indiana law did. It established that legal standard. And when you have a legal standard, you don't pick winners and losers. It just says, here's how each claim has to be evaluated. And that's one of the beauties of RFRA. It applies equally to all religious groups, large and small.
That said, this is all to say, it sounds like, Adele, that the Indiana law was indeed truly modeled after federal religious freedom law, and was a reaffirmation at the level of the state government in Indiana of what President Bill Clinton and a democratically controlled Congress brought to bear 22 years ago. Is that an accurate assessment?
It's absolutely an accurate assessment. Now, the critics of the law have said, no, 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 Indiana's law is completely different. They've said, quote, it's far broader. They're just wrong. And some of those same critics are people who don't, who oppose all religious liberty. They oppose RFRA in all its forms, old and new. The Indiana law had two tweaks to update the language from that was adopted in 1992 because courts and lawyers had found some ambiguities in the 1992 law. The first one was they updated it to make it crystal clear that the law applies not just to individuals like you and me, but also to corporations. Well, that should be no surprise to us because that's the same thing that the Supreme Court said about the federal law just last year. It said the federal law means that corporations can bring religious claims. It doesn't mean they'll win them, but it means that they can bring them. So the Indiana law stated that expressly. Why do they have to do that? Because some people had been questioning whether the federal law applied to corporations. Supreme Court settled that question. Indiana didn't want to have the same fight in its state court, so it said, okay, we're going to make it crystal clear. We intend this language to mean exactly the same thing the Supreme Court said it meant. So that was one thing that it did that was updating the language of the federal RFRA. And the second thing it did, there's a division in the courts of appeals about the federal RFRA, whether or not it can apply in suits brought by one private party against another private party when the first guy is invoking federal law as his weapon to use against another private person. Courts like the Ninth Circuit, the Second Circuit, which are very liberal courts in general, have both said, yes, you can use RFRA as a defense in that situation. If someone's using federal law as a weapon against you, then you can use RFRA, another federal law, as a defense. Because courts have gone different ways on that, Indiana said, hey, we're going to update the language of our RFRA to make it absolutely clear. We want our state law to go on this side of that circuit split and not the other side. So those were two ways that it was updated from the federal law. In my mind, that doesn't make it far broader. That's just updating it for the current context and answering questions so people don't have open questions when they go into court and they know exactly what the law means in Indiana.
Adele Keem, she is an attorney with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. Adele, my understanding is that your concern is that if indeed the governor and the state legislature in Indiana pursue some of their proposed changes or quote-unquote fixes for their now currently standing religious freedom law, that could have very, very negative consequences for religious freedom. Tell us about that.
The Indiana RFRA wasn't broken, and it doesn't need to be fixed. The federal RFRA is not broken. It doesn't need to be fixed either. The people who are howling otherwise are people who are, by and large, opposed to religious liberty. They're opposed to it in general. They're opposed to it across the board. And you can see that in their statements if you track their public statements. The Indiana law is fine as is, and it was a great law when it was signed into law last week, and it should stay the same. So we're disappointed that the governor feels that he needs to back down on this, because he doesn't. He's on the right side.
All right. We'll continue with Adele Keem in just a few moments. We'll ask her about where things stand and what they might look like going forward as of today. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We continue momentarily. It's now 21 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. What really is at stake in the midst of the controversy surrounding Indiana and its state law that seeks to safeguard religious freedom? We could probably put the state of Arkansas into that category as well. Adele Keem is an esteemed lawyer. She now works with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit legal defense law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Depending on what kind of fix comes about, if any fix comes about at all here, Adele, what's weighing in the balance for the United States of America?
Well, what's weighing in the balance is our first freedom. There's a reason that religious liberty is part of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's because religious believers at the time of the founding stood up to our founders and said, we will not vote or support the ratification of the Constitution unless it is clear that our freedom to exercise our religion, which was the reason that many of the colonists left England and Europe in the first place, our freedom to exercise our religion will not be limited by the federal government. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act recognizes and protects that in the modern era. So what's at stake is nothing less than our first freedom.
What happens if that is further undermined or even goes by the wayside, in your estimation? And I ask recognizing that you've practiced law and lived and worked and been involved in the various functionings of the church in two different countries, at least, in the United States and Canada. What could change for us in the U.S.?
International law scholars that study societies around the world have concluded that societies that respect religious freedom and especially respect the rights of religious minorities are more prosperous, more stable, have greater social peace than societies that violate the rights of the religious minorities among them. It's not easy to see why. A government that thinks it has the right to interfere in people's relationship with their God is a government that will interfere in every other aspect of the people's freedom. The United States loses its broad-based consensus that protecting religious freedom is a highest order good. Then we are opening ourselves up to the kind of unrest, the kind of conflict, and the kind of tragedies that we see around the world when we look at societies that repress religious believers.
Final question for you, Adele Keim. Without naming the authors and the writers in the publication, there is nonetheless a very interesting scholarly article making its way around, wherein some law school professors and even deans of law schools are weighing in, under condition of anonymity, weighing in on this controversy surrounding the Indiana Religious Freedom Act. They're saying many of the same things that you're saying publicly, yet the article also suggests that the quote-unquote constituency of support for religious freedom in America simply isn't present any longer. That is to say, the article suggests that the number of Americans, even Christian Americans, who understands what is at stake and is actively engaged sufficiently with their elected leaders to let their voice be heard, they're just not there. And the writing is on the wall here. What are your thoughts on that? Is there a constituency still in America that cares about this?
My job every day is to represent religious believers in their claims against the government. And I have the honor of representing people, men and women, who have put everything on the line for their beliefs. They don't all believe the same thing about God. They do believe the same thing about human beings, which is that we have an inalienable conscience and that it's on us, it's our responsibility to do what our conscience requires of us, to obey a higher law while living in society with others. I see those faces every day, and I have no doubt that there is still a constituency for religious freedom in this country. And I hope your listeners will be part of that constituency and will stand up around the dinner table, will stand up in their schools, will stand up at their jobs, will stand up before their elected officials and say, we do not want to be part of a society that thinks that it can tell people what their relationship with God should look like. And we may not agree with each other about God, but we will stand up and defend each other's rights to follow God as we understand it.
Sobering words from Adele Keim with the Beckett Fund. Adele, thanks very much for being here, and thank you for what you do. 26 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. I'm glad you're with us.
Now, back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
Great to have you with us on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be informative, challenging, helpful and hopeful all at the same time as we look at the day's news. Still to come, an update on, the very latest in the, the slow-moving developments in the world of religious liberty, in the realm of religious liberty here in America. I'm still not convinced. In the last half hour, I hope you heard it, we had a very striking guest joining us, Adele Keim, who is an attorney with the nonprofit legal defense group, the Beckett Fund, and she offered her insight that she believes Christians in the United States of America are beginning to wake up and recognize that the assumptions we've made about our country are no longer true. The assumptions that one can practice their Christian faith and just simply be a Christian, not even doing much of anything, simply identifying as a Christian and identifying with the name of Christ, that's kind of a safe thing to do in America. It's not so much anymore. And Adele Keim was suggesting that people are waking up and recognizing that. I'd like to think she's right about that, but I don't take that for granted. You and I need to get our family members, first and foremost, people in our churches, our extended family members, pastors, we need you on board with this. You cannot ignore this. We need to politely and respectfully get the pastor in the pulpit at our church focused in on this issue and engaged in the discussion with it. And I will ask you this, coming up probably, Aaron, within the next show ends at the top of the hour, probably within the next 3 hours, I would say by 11 a.m. Central Time today, we will have text and audio and links and everything as a one blog page on our network website at myfaithradio.com. If you get to myfaithradio.com and get to the Austin Hill in the Morning show page, we will have text and audio of Adele Keim's remarks and all the insight that she offered us on our website. If you would get over to myfaithradio.com, 11 a.m. Central Time at the latest, and get that page and put it on your Facebook page, email it to your friends and family members, tweet it on your Twitter account, send it around all over the place and tell your friends and family members and people in your community, people in your church, tell them, please read this and click and listen to what this lady said. It is that important. It is that timely. It is that urgent. Please do that. I'm requesting that favor of you. This lady needs to be heard. We need to get this information out to people. This is serious business here in the U.S. And if you're one of our listeners in Canada, I would say the same thing. Even though you don't have a vote or a voice in the public policy discussions and the discussions about law and governance in the United States of America, you're still on the same continent with us. What happens in the U.S. matters in Canada. Vice versa is true as well. Wherever you're listening, please, as I said, no later than 11 a.m. Central Time today, we'll have this content at myfaithradio.com. Get it, grab it, share it, listen to it, read it, take it seriously. Prayerfully consider what this attorney, Adele Keim, is telling us and take action. We'll have that for you later this morning. Again, it's myfaithradio.com. Now, that said, I've got another question here that I want to pose to you. And we'll just say, we can open up the phone lines, right? Can we do that? All right, sure. The number's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. This is, it's kind of been amassing in my mind here for the last couple of weeks, actually. But it's kind of hit a crescendo. We have an abundance, a preponderance, if you will, of very biblically based and Christian-specific entertainment content, I'll call it. It's just everywhere. And the latest TV series to capture the hearts and minds of Christians in the United States of America, and right, it has, it's A.D., the miniseries. In fact, we'll play that little bit of the soundtrack here in just a few moments. It's the way they incorporated this, and I've got this audio from the video trailer from NBC Television, and they incorporate that song, We Are One in the Spirit, they incorporate this into the motion picture itself, or the series, really, and the trailer. It's beautiful. It's riveting. Even the audio is captivating, but the video especially is A.D., the miniseries, which started on Easter weekend, last weekend, depicting the crucifixion of Christ and the events that led up to that. We will, in subsequent episodes, of course, this Sunday being the next one, we will see the resurrection of Christ and what happens after death, A.D., after the death of Christ. This is a mainstream commercial dominant broadcasting network called NBC Television that's bringing us this. Now, you go back 20, 25 years ago, that never would have happened. The television series back about 20 years ago, the television series Touched by an Angel, which, as I recall, was broadcast on the CBS television network, if I'm remembering correctly, Touched by an Angel sort of set a new trend in Christian-specific or even spiritually-based television content in the United States of America. I know the Touched by an Angel series itself wasn't Christian specific. In fact, a lot of Christians were critical of it and said, well, this, you know, deviates from a biblical understanding of spirituality and such. Okay, I get that. And I was never a huge fan of Touched by an Angel, but it did nonetheless sort of open up this new realm, if you will, in motion picture and television entertainment. And so here we are in the year 2015, having come off, an amazing year last year with very Christian-specific motion pictures. Now we've got the AD television series on NBC television. We are also told that the producers of the latest version of Left Behind, the motion picture, are quite sure that there needs to be a sequel to Left Behind. There's questions. I mean, the first Left Behind motion picture, if you'll recall, starring actor Kurt Cameron, that was released back in the year 2000. Here it was brought to life again in 2014, a bit of a different storyline, but nonetheless a story, a portrayal of what some people believe will be the events that unfurl in The Rapture, starring actor Nicolas Cage. That did well enough, apparently, in theaters and with DVD sales and downloads and all of that. That apparently was successful enough to where now the producers are saying, we need a sequel to this. And our friends over at ChristianPost.com are reporting this early this morning that the producers of last year's Left Behind remake have announced there will indeed be a sequel to the Bible Apocalypse movie. That's what they call. It will pick up where the Left Behind motion picture left off and further depict the rapture. Now, this is an interesting quote here from Paul Lalonde. He's the CEO of Cloud 10 Pictures, the company that produced last year's Left Behind motion picture. He says, we are obviously living in the last days, and if the rapture were to happen today, there are a lot of people who just aren't ready for it. That's his line of reasoning to produce another sequel to the Left Behind motion picture. Well, look, that may be, and I'm not going to question his sincerity in that and wanting to convey the gospel in a timely sort of fashion. But the bottom line is, the Left Behind motion picture sold. It sold well, sold a lot of DVDs, sold a lot of tickets. It was commercially successful. The AD television series, the miniseries that began again, as I said last weekend, on NBC television, that was far and away the most viewed television program last Sunday night, all across the United States of America. That is very, very significant. As a matter of fact, I noticed our friends John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas last Sunday night as the show was going on. They were tweeting away on Twitter about the kind of the historic significance of this. So, again, oh, and then there's also news. I need to take a break here. There's also news about a major secular magazine publishing company getting into the business of launching yet a new Christian and Christian spiritually based magazine that you'll soon see at grocery stores around the country. All of a sudden, all these major mainstream producers, it seems all of a sudden, it's been a long time in coming, but some very mainstream commercial media producers are flooding the market with Christian specific content for American consumers here in the U.S. Do you like this? Is this a good thing? Are you pleased with the AD television series? Are you glad that there will be a sequel to the Left Behind motion picture? Is this a good thing? I'd love to get your thoughts on this. It's quite a, as a person who works in the media industry, among other things, it is quite a phenomenal sight to behold, to watch this happen. I think there's pros and cons to it, but what do you think? It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Are you glad to see the developments of a preponderance, a flood of biblically based and Christian-specific entertainment content in the United States of America? Tell me your thoughts on that. We'll get your calls up next. It's 46 past the hour. From the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're here.
We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. And we pray that our unity may one day be restored.
This is the Faith Radio Network.
We'll know we are Christians by our love, by our love.
This, by the way, is from the soundtrack of the AD miniseries on NBC television. Crank that up if you will. This is riveting stuff.
Turn away from hate. Turn away from violence. Jesus is the light of the world.
Mary, Jesus has risen.
And by the way, that British-sounding voice, compelling people, calling people to turn away from hate and to turn towards Jesus, that is, interestingly enough, that is an African-American, a black actor, black male actor, playing the role of John the Apostle in the AD television miniseries, which I think is just riveting and fascinating and profoundly positive that non-Anglo actors and actresses were integrated into this program. In fact, it's a black female actress that portrays Mary Magdalene in this. What do you make of all this preponderance of very Christian-specific and in many cases biblically-based entertainment content in America via mainstream channels, movie production companies, mainstream television networks, and the like? Is it a good thing? Tell me your thoughts. It's 877-933-2484. Patty is up next in Waverly, Iowa. Patty, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to say I'm really thankful for the heart of Roma Downey and Mark Burnett for watched, you know, the documentary about how they made it and why, and right. I've read things. But
let me interrupt you for a second. I'm glad you brought up the name Roma Downey. I feel the same way as you. Roma Downey was a lady who was instrumental in putting together the Touched by an Angel television series years ago. Patty is correct. She is the creative driving force behind this AD television series. I'm grateful for what she has done. But, Patty, you've probably heard, as I have, some Christians being very critical of Roma Downey because she's not quite theologically or biblically on the same page as other people. Have you heard some of that criticism of her?
I haven't personally,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't be surprised about it. Partly, you know, she's, I guess they said in that she was Roman Catholic, and some
right.
evangelicals might have a problem. But I do have to say that with both the Bible miniseries, which we saw some of, and this one, it was so highly recommended. I was really looking forward to it. But I have to say we were disappointed about some things, and I don't question their motives. It's just that they filled in with a lot of things that you have to do in a movie because there isn't enough in just the scripture itself to make
correct. Right.
But I wish they had at least included all that was, like in the crucifixion, you expect to hear the seven words from the cross, particularly like, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do,
mm-hmm.
which is really, I think, one of the most important.
Yeah, and agreed. And I have heard other people critical of that portrayal of the crucifixion in last Sunday's episode of AD, the miniseries, and your point's well taken. But, Patty, I appreciate the call. And, yes, I'm glad she brought up the name Roma Downey. I think the criticism is a bit misplaced. I'm looking at this and saying this is a matter of things moving in the proper direction. And I believe as Christians in an otherwise very secular culture, we shouldn't just be defined by that which we don't like. We need to praise what we do like. And I believe this is one of those moments where such praise is warranted. Joel is up next in Plymouth, Minnesota, listening to us on Faith 900 AM. Joel, welcome to the show, sir. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good, sir. What's up?
Well, I think this is just outstanding. It just shows how hungry the world is and how hungry Christians have become for things of God rather than things of the world. How they're just striving and driving to get more of what God has to offer. And it's just great how even the secular world is bringing the Lord into things. Because I watched that Left Behind movie, and they were actually talking about God and becoming a Christian and that Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. And I mean, it was amazing, and it was a secular movie. That was with Nicolas Cage. It was just so hard to believe they were actually doing this.
Right. No, I think for all the reasons you cite, it's a good sign, and it is a good thing, Joel, and I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. 877-933-2484 is the number. Joanne is in Minneapolis listening to us on Faith 90.7 FM. Joanne, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. I think that it is a good thing that people want traditional values-based programs, not a constant stream of anti-biblical entertainment. And even secular producers recognize where the money is. And so they are producing content that provides them an income and is satisfying the need for a more traditional values-based programming. I would say and agree with their first caller there that biblical accuracy is a concern. That you said that you saw both pros and cons to this, and I think the biblical accuracy is one of the possible the drawbacks to it. But I do believe that secular producers recognize this need and are producing content at the demand of public because they're turning off their TVs. They don't want to watch it.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Getting people to actually watch over-the-air broadcast television channels, your local TV channels, your local TV news, the network content that's provided on your local channels, whether you're receiving it with an antenna or a cable, getting people to watch conventional television is incredibly difficult. And so, and to your point, Joanne, here you have NBC saying, well, we'll create something very specific and of high interest to a huge portion of the American population to get them to come back to their local television channel. And it's working. And I guess I look at that. I hear the concern about biblical accuracy, but I'm looking at this saying this is overwhelmingly a positive development. It sounds like you're in agreement with that. Do I hear you correctly?
Yes, you certainly do.
Yeah. Listen, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. And on that issue of biblical accuracy, listen, Patty in Waverly, Iowa said it previously. She said it's very difficult to merely take the wording, the verbiage, the content in the text of Scripture and turn that into a motion picture script. That is absolutely the case. I recall the motion picture, the blockbuster last year, Exodus, God and Kings. It's amazingly high-tech and sophisticated portrayal of the parting of the Red Sea. How do you portray the parting of the Red Sea, something that no human eye has seen in this present era, right? Well, it was spectacular, and some people criticized that and said, well, it's not exactly how it happened. How did it exactly happen? You know, and were it not for that very spectacular portrayal of the parting of the Red Sea, there would have been something missing. Be that as it may, there's lots of great shows and movies out today. Checking out. Hope you will. I'm Austin Hill. See you tomorrow morning at 6. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program from the Faith Radio Network. Have a great day and keep it right here. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.